Studio 360。
The documentaries of Errol Morris can be dark. The Thin Blue Line was about the murder of a police officer in Dallas. The Oscar-winning Fog of War was about the war in Vietnam. He's also documented the abuses at Abu Ghraib in Afghanistan, the life of a Holocaust-denying death row technician, and he interviewed Ed Gein. He's a serial killer. So, what unspeakable horror does Errol Morris's new film explore? A really nice lady in Massachusetts who makes really big photographic portraits.
In my life, I've worked hard not to be down. I don't like to take pictures of people who are sad. I have this idea that it's my role in the universe to make people feel better.
That's Elsa Dorfman, the photographer who is the subject of Errol Morris's new documentary, The B-Side. For decades, she's been renowned for her enormous Polaroid portraits of everyday people and of non-everyday people like Allen Ginsberg and Bob Dylan and Faye Dunaway. Even for those celebrities you think you've already seen from every possible angle, Elsa Dorfman's portraits are really warm and revelatory. And as it turns out, so is Morris's film about Dorfman. It looks back at her one-of-a-kind DIY career and now, at age 80, the beginning of her retirement. And Errol Morris is here to talk about that film and his other films. Errol, welcome back to Studio 360.
A pleasure to be back here.
So I'm obviously a great fan of yours.
Oh, good. You're a fan. I can relax now.
You can totally relax. So I guess I knew, okay, he makes movies about charming eccentrics on the one hand and then reviled pariahs on the other, kind of, in a basic way.
My line? Never have met a pariah I didn't like.
Well, there you go. And you've done well by many of them. But this is a lovely film about a lovely person, this 80-year-old portrait photographer, Elsa Dorfman. How did you choose her?
I've known her for 25, 26 years. Elsa works on this large format Polaroid camera. One of the few people who has access to this. Mm-hmm. She was moving a lot of these gigantic, really big Polaroid photographs, 60 by 40, out of the house. And I thought, I should start making this film.
Aside from being about a much happier subject than lots of Errol Morris documentaries, this movie looks different. So why is that?
So we decided to use multiple cameras in shooting this portrait of Elsa Dorfman. And I have used this lens system, the Revolution, for years. I've used it on I don't know how many commercials.
And so the Revolution lens, which allows you
the
to—
The Revolution system.
The Revolution system is, in 75 words or less, what?
Do I have to count the words as I'm saying them?
I'll do that for you.
Thank you so much. It's a double periscope, so it can turn this way and that way so that you can really move the camera in many different directions, and you can do it pretty easily.
So that it just allows lenses to go places that fixed lens on a fixed camera can't.
That is it.
Okay.
And the nice thing about the Revolution for me is that I could operate the camera and interview at the same time. I could, what's the word, multitask.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to ordinarily you have to be not operating the camera?
Well, when I'm on the Interitron, I'm trapped. And I thought, no, I'm not using the Interitron on this.
Right. The Interitron. I like saying that word. That's your trademark setup you've used for 15 years or so, which is this system that has mirrors carefully placed so that when you're interviewing somebody, they are both looking directly into your camera and maintaining eye contact with you. So why wasn't that right for filming The B-Side?
Because I got tired of doing things the same way. Don't you?
Yes. Is that it, really?
Yeah, I think it is it. it gets boring after a while. The Interitron started to bore me after a while.
Huh.
And I used it quite a bit. Enough already.
Huh. Is there some reason you didn't have your lawyers patent the Interitron? Because that's a very patentable idea.
Because I'm stupid.
Oh, okay.
I had made a film about Stephen Hawking, Brief History of Time. And the New York Times ran an article about it. And they had a two-page spread that showed me with my new device, the Interitron. What I didn't know at the time, you have a year, 1 year from the date of the first public announcement of your invention device. I had no idea.
Huh. I thought you were just Mr. Open Source. I don't care. Here, the world, have it. I guess not.
No, I care deeply.
Yeah.
I'd like the revenue from that thing.
Exactly.
I'm going to end up in a substandard nursing home,
yeah,
strapped to a bed, soaked with my own urine, simply because I was unaware of this fundamental fact of patent law.
Oh, I very much doubt that. Errol, your movies are great in lots of different ways, including that they often capture these moments of surprising candor.
If you're kind of a, oh, this will be the same forever person, or if you're a photographer and you're always nailing down what's the now, when you realize it doesn't matter how much you try to nail down the now is racing beyond you. All of a sudden you have these cameras that they're artifacts like ashtrays.
That's the B-side, your portrait of Elsa Dorfman. I'm sure you didn't ask. Maybe you did. But, like, does photography remind you of the ephemerality and evanescence of life, Elsa? But I assume you didn't. But you got to that, her making that connection. Do you have a set of tactics or a strategy for getting to those moments?
I don't think it's a calculation of that sort at all. Either you enjoy talking to people or you don't. Either you're interested in people or you're not. It's part of the deal. Why are you drawn to doing this? There's something about talking to people that interests you. Is it a calculation? I don't know you well enough, but I doubt it somehow.
No, you're right. You obviously are good at it and good at not just having a friendly conversation with somebody, but have conversations that go in places that surprise the person you're talking to.
Yeah. Why that is, hell if I know.
Are you a good listener? Is that part of it?
I am a good listener. Oddly enough, what is a good listener? A good listener is a person who bothers to listen at all, because most people don't. A person who tries not to senselessly interrupt, but waits just out of some interest. What's going to happen next? What are they going to say?
There was an amazing moment like that in your film, The Fog of War. This is Robert McNamara, who was Secretary of Defense during the Vietnam War, talking about the U.S. firebombing of Japan during World War II, which was an operation where he worked for General Curtis LeMay.
LeMay said if we'd lost the war, we'd all have been prosecuted as war criminals. And I think he's right. He, and I'd say I, were behaving as war criminals. LeMay recognized that what he was doing would be thought immoral if his side had lost. But what makes it immoral if you lose and not immoral if you win?
To me, that was one of the most memorable moments of that very good film, Fog of War. Just so shockingly frank and said with such sort of sang-froid about, yes, I was a war criminal, but we won. How did that moment come?
Oddly enough, this line about our side won or else I would have been tried as a war criminal came very, very early on. He wanted to say that. I'd like to take credit for it. I'd like to say
beat him up and got it out of him.
I'd like to say I elicited it through the use of some trick or another, but that is not true. I was there to listen and to record it, for which I am very grateful. And coming from Robert McNamara and a former Secretary of Defense for both John F. Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson, an extraordinary statement.
Speaking of presidents, long before he was president or anybody imagined he could be president in 2002, you talked to Donald Trump about his favorite movie. How did that happen? How did that come about?
I had been hired to make a movie to run at the beginning of the Oscars. And my brief was to ask people about their favorite movies. And so I set up in four different cities, interviewed people, famous people, not so famous people. And we're in New York in a studio. And at one time in the green room, I have Walter Cronkite, Jesse Norman, Iggy Pop, Mikhail Gorbachev, and Donald Trump.
Wow. So the Russian collusion was going on then.
That was the very beginning of it, absolutely.
What an amazing moment. So basically everybody was just told, Errol's going to talk to you about your favorite movie?
Yeah.
Well, here's a clip of the not yet president.
Citizen Kane was really about accumulation. And at the end of the accumulation, you see what happens, and it's not necessarily all positive. But I think you learn in Kane that maybe wealth isn't everything. Because he had the wealth, but he didn't have the happiness. In real life, I believe that wealth does, in fact, isolate you from other people. It's a protective mechanism. You have your guard up, much more so than you would if you didn't have wealth.
Now, if you could give Charles Foster Kane advice, what would you say to him?
Get yourself a different woman.
And of course, he was then between wives number two and three. So,
yeah, it's the takeaway from Citizen Kane. What should Charles Foster Kane have learned from his experiences? Find a new wife.
Yes.
And if that one doesn't work out, find one after that.
Yes.
And so on and so forth.
He was so vulnerable. Did he just come that? Did he come? He understood what this was, and I'm ready to play.
No, not really. I didn't even use that clip in the film that I made for the Oscars. Instead, it was Donald Trump talking about King Kong at the top of the Empire State Building.
Seeing King Kong try and conquer New York.
He came and conquered New York? I can identify with that.
Yeah. Which is like a Trump branded line. So is there
a Trump branded line from Trump?
Yes, indeed. Errol Morris, it's been a pleasure and a delight and an honor. Thank you.
Likewise, thank you.
Errol Morris's new film, The B-Side, Elsa Dorfman's portrait photography, is in theaters starting June 30th. And you can watch a clip of Errol explaining the Interatron in greater detail at studio360.org.